podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Mirror Man, Mirror Man, you twist and turn my mind until I don't know who I am. Mirror Man.
Good morning and welcome to a new edition of the Arsenal Opinion Podcast. We're going to shorten it. It's the AOP. We're rebranding. There's something bubbling. There's some merchandise coming. It's the AOP moving forward. I'm joined by the mighty Matt Candela. How you doing, Matt?
Oh, I'm good, mate. I'm good. It's been a week where, I think you said it earlier, this could be the best transfer window in 20 years. We did a Patreon special a couple of weeks back where we went and looked back at that transfer window of 1997-98 and wistfully were wondering why the hell we couldn't ever have those transfer windows ever since. And lo and behold, it's like the gods heard us. And we could be shaping up for the best Arsenal transfer window ever.
Listen, I'm going to go there, Matt. And the reason that it's ever is because we're signing players that we know about. These aren't like, I'm not sure whether Nelson Vivas is going to come good. These are Premier League proven players. This is a massive outlay that's looking close to 180 million. I'm excited. Matt, there's been a flood at your house. Is everything okay?
Everything's fine. We're surviving. It's minor in the grand scheme of things.
And no sparkly earphones today. I think the listeners are going to be a little bit upset.
I've gone back to basics, you know, the old wired Apple headphones.
Well, the sound is absolutely crisp as you like. Will the hottest take be as crisp as the sound? Who knows? Let's go right to the hottest take, Matt. What's your hottest take of this week so far?
My hottest take is that the way we're going about our transfer business means that for the first time in a long time, Arsenal fans are walking around with their chest puffed out. I was out last night having a few drinks, met a mate, big Chelsea fan, and it was very, very nice to go in there and go, we're doing business. We're doing stuff. And there is not another team in the league other than Manchester City who is not looking at us and is very, very worried about what we're doing, because this is a different Arsenal. This is an Arsenal absolutely full of ambition. And, you know, there was this concern that at the end of last season, you know, we had a terrible last couple of games, and we could have bought that low morale into the start of the season. And I think we even talked about it and said, look, if we got off to a bad start after one game, all the Arteta outs are going to be back. But what they're doing is the feel-good factor's back. And that's one of the things that people forget about transfer windows. Yes, it's about the players, but it's also about energy, you know? And I just feel like there's so much energy. Look, we have to get these done. But already, Marquinhos, probably butchered the pronunciation of that, Fabio Vieira, Gabriel Jesus looks to have put pen to paper. And then there's a ton of smoke around Rafinha, Lisandro Martinez. And you wouldn't be surprised to have more. We just don't do that. So hottest take is we're back.
I love that. You kind of lent into where my hottest take was going. You and I had a conversation earlier on in the season, and you were like, momentum's gone. It's no-mentum. But momentum's back. Momentum's back. We had a difficult end to the season. A lot of it was clouded by the lack of business that we did in January. But the club were basically like, if we can't sign the best players, we're not going to sign anyone. And there was a little bit of a question mark over whether that was the correct strategy. Arsenal looked likely to spend £180 million this transfer window. Arsenal aren't going for top four here. Arsenal were trying to win the Premier League. It won't be next season, but I don't think there's a team in the chasing pack for the Premier League that looks more ready, based on who we think we're going to sign, than Arsenal. And the fans now all understand the strategy. If you don't understand the Arsenal strategy now, you're an idiot. You're a fool. Strategy's not for you. If you can't see the vision of where Arsenal want to take the football, I feel sorry for you. Like, I honestly feel sorry. If you are negative about where Arsenal are right now, take a time out. Go and pick up another sport. Pick up tennis. Pick up the new LIV Golf Series that Saudi Arabia running, because football's not for you. I am absolutely over the moon that every single problem that we had going into the end of the season appears to be getting answered emphatically, not with squad players, not with not too sure about, but players at the top level of whatever the sort of area that we're looking for. So I'm absolutely.
I think there's one more point, which is, you know, we didn't spend any money in January, and the sort of narrative that came out was we want to spend it in the right places, and we're better off keeping that money, keeping our powder dry, and spending it in the summer. The problem is, when we heard that, we didn't believe it, really. What we really thought was, we didn't really think that we'd be putting an extra 50, 60 million on top of what we were going to spend in the summer. But that's what it looks like with these types of numbers. You know, when you're looking at what we're projected to spend, maybe 200 million, close to 200 million, that looks suspiciously like a summer transfer window budget plus 50, 60 million from January. So all of these little efforts are part of rebuilding the trust between the club and the fans, so that next January or the January after, if the club doesn't move and they say, we're keeping our powder dry, rather than everyone being up in arms, it might be like, well, you know what? Yeah, we saw what we saw that we were potentially going to spend money on Alexander Isaac for 75 million in January. We didn't. We waited till the summer, and we got Gabriel Jesus for 45. So I think all of this is part of bringing the club and the fans back together. And I think transfer windows ultimately are a big piece of why the relationship between club and fans broke down at Arsenal. Because if you go all the way back, we thought that was why we were leaving Highbury. Never materialised. I mean, that was the reason why we left Highbury, was to spend big. We never did it. And then we had those bizarre windows, like, you know, the one where we didn't even sign an outfield player. And these things are just so bizarre.
The Petr Cech window, yeah.
That it just sends you, it's like they're gaslighting the fans. Whereas this feels like a normal transfer window of a big club, identifying issues, buying decent players within your pay structure, and having them all ready for the first game of the season. It shouldn't be rocket science, but it has been. And that's why it just feels so, so exciting.
I totally agree with that. It's nice to see that there is a clear brief that all the fans kind of loosely agree to. And every time there's a clear brief, Arteta does something about it. Like, sometimes with Arsene Wenger, it's like, well, I think we conceded 50 goals last season, so maybe... And most of them were from set pieces. Maybe we need a tall centre-back. And Arsene Wenger would be like, I'm sorry, we need a number 10. Arteta sees the obvious problems. Like, it's a fullback issue. It's a lack of goals. It's a lack of end product. It's a lack of bravery. Everything seems to get answered. I do want to go off on a slight tangent before we get into the real mixer, because this is going to be a little bit controversial. And this is part of the trust build back, and maybe a little bit of insight into what the hell is going on at Arsenal. But our first topic of the day is winativity breeds winativity. Is winativity a word? Absolutely. But I think Arsenal fans are going to have to come round to a new reality. And it's always difficult for football fans to shift. Arsenal fans couldn't handle that we left Highbury to go to the Emirates. Arsenal fans still say, did we really need to move? Did we really need to move? Of course we needed to move, because the difference between 40 million in matchday revenue and 100 million in matchday revenue is massive. So it's an obvious shift. But the emotion attached to Highbury caused people to and ah over whether it was a good decision. One thing that we've always wondered about KSC is it's a property empire. They buy a property in Kansas. They sit on it for 25 years and, you know, they make 5-10% on that. That's how they make their cash. They're a sports ownership group that's never really cared about winning. I think there was one time when Stan Kroenke, they'd won a cup and he said, actually, winning's quite nice. So it's almost like winning trophies wasn't the same as it is for other billionaires. Well, KSC are doing pretty well. Right now, they are 3-2 up. in the Stanley Cup. They're losing to Tampa Bay right now, 1-0 in the second, I don't know, do you call it a quarter? Who knows? But they could win the Stanley Cup. Their basketball team has been to the playoffs. Their Super Bowl team, NFL, I went to see them to win the Super Bowl. Do you think there is an element of KSC have got a taste for winning and they're starting to understand that having great sports teams that are winning adds to the value?
100%. I think success breeds success, or winativity breeds winativity. So I think that's great news for us. And then I think there's a couple of other things at play. I think they stumbled across a bit of a formula with the Rams, with hiring in a young coach who, I think, you know, at the end of the day, it was a cost efficient option, and the only way was up at the time. But the guy, the right guy, has led them with his leadership to and a sort of a modern approach to building, to team building, has led them to the Super Bowl. So I think it's impossible for them not to see that and go, well, why don't we just replicate that? Because that's just part of what any good business does, right? So that's great. And then I think the other piece is the role of, there's probably two other things at play. One is age. So I think Stan's not getting any younger. And I think as people get older, they start thinking more about legacy and, you know, competition and ambition. So I think there's a piece of that. And then I think that's aligned with the younger Kroenkes in the mix, the Josh Kroenkes. And look, you know, you can say what you want, and he's come in for some stick, but I think since he's been more involved, Arsenal have got better. Because at the end of the day, he's the one who has to take the flak, because he's almost become, you know, the front man for it. And to be fair to the Kroenkes, I'm not anti-Kroenkes, by the way. I know that sounds... Everyone loves to hate on KSC. We've wasted so much money. We've made so much.
Yeah. We're in the top five for net spend over the last 10 years in the whole of Europe. That's a fact that goes unmentioned.
So obviously it's not just about spending money. It's about putting the right people in place to spend it. But yeah, I think all of those things are helping. And I think it's a feel-good factor. And, you know, when all your clubs are doing well and you get a knock saying, Stan, do you mind if we, can you rustle up a little, can you help us with funding this deal, or giving us some sort of access to some more cash, or loosening the transfer budget around this, and your other clubs are doing well, it's much easier for him to do that, you know? Whereas if all the clubs are terrible, they're all doing shit, why is he going to do it? There's no point, you know? So you've got the guy in a good mood, basically. And I think that's a good thing for us, and we're benefiting from it.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I know that there's I went to a talk, and it was the most elite, over-the-top talk I've ever been to. The name of the talk was, it was something like, why everyone should consider multi-club ownership. So like, Only the richest of the rich could be in that room listening to it, saying, yeah. Well, I've got it all wrong. I've only got one sports franchise in the world. But Manchester City do a really good job of multi-club ownership, just very specifically in the world of football. Like, I think they've got 13 clubs all around the world, and they're trying to get like shared learning, shared technology, and they sort of shift players around in the model. KSC have multi-club ownership, but they've only got two soccer clubs. But it is interesting that every club seems to be picking up a level. They're not all using exactly the same strategy, but I know that the Americans get quite angry when you say that there are comparisons to what's going on with the Rams, but there are comparisons. They've invested in a young coach. I don't think the Rams built back in the same way that Arsenal have. They didn't go for a youth plus sort of model, but there's definitely more focus on winning trophies now. I don't feel, as a fan, Arsenal are seen as an asset like they were before. I felt like we were just a crown jewel in a property portfolio before, but now it feels like they're taking it seriously. They're trying something interesting. They've taken a very innovative approach. And let's be honest, I was thinking about this today. The model that Arsenal have taken on and where we are in the process, I'm feeling pretty good compared to a Chelsea fan right now. Todd Bowley, technical director, looking at Cristiano Ronaldo at 37. That's not Chelsea.
Well, 100%. And I think the other thing is, this hasn't been a strategic masterclass to get us to this point. It's been basically we've tried everything else.
It's a fumble.
And this is the next one. And you know, we tried just hoping that Arsene Wenger could just do it, could rediscover his golden touch. Didn't work. We then tried, you know, let's create a sort of a better system inside the club with like Gazidis and Raul Sanelli and
Sven Mislintat.
God, remember him?
Yeah.
And all of those guys didn't work, or certainly the personnel didn't work. And now we've got this sort of model, which is actually, if you think about it, a hybrid of the two. It's simpler, but it's still it's a smaller group. It's really Arteta and Edu. Vinay is not really part of the doesn't really appear to be part of the on pitch stuff. You know, he's very much the CEO of the off-pitch stuff. It feels like to me anyway, and I may be wrong there.
He's not near any signing, is he? I haven't seen his face in a while.
No. But I think it's interesting. I think they've found their groove. They certainly feel much more relaxed and in sync with one another. And it was really, you know, I think both of them were under a lot of pressure, but for them to have come out and be behaving the way they are now, it's really positive.
I totally agree. All right, Matt. Well, I know what you're thinking, and I know what everybody listening on this podcast is thinking. Where are the slides? Okay, I'm going to find the slides and we're going to get them up and running. Oh, I've gone to slide 10. All right, so if you're listening to the podcast, we've got some slides to go through because lots of exciting things have been happening in the world of Arsenal over the last few weeks. I'm not going to do famous shirt numbers first. Okay, Johnny's not here, and that means that we can talk behind his back and say mean things. There have been lots of conversations between the three of us this year about William Saliba, the Saliba ultras, the frantic behavior around him going out on loan at 20 years old, I think he was, when he went out last year. He had an incredible loan period. He played 4,500 minutes. He got a call up to the French international squad, and there were big questions because he's got 2 years left to go on his deal. And Johnny wasn't sure whether Arteta fancied him, but the player came back and the player said, "I'm sorry, Marseille, I love Arsenal." But we were like, "Yeah, well, there's no point in coming back saying you love us if you've got one foot out the door and you won't sign the new deal." Chris Wheatley, man like Chris Wheatley, said that William Saliba's people have been in with Arsenal all week and things are looking very, very positive, that the Frenchman is going to sign a new deal with Arsenal. Matt Candela, how big is this news?
I didn't expect him to be signing a new deal, frankly. And the main reason I didn't really expect him to was actually nothing really to do with Arsenal. I think it's more to do with a French teammate of his, Kylian Mbappe, who is leading the way in these sort of young world-class players who are backing themselves and not signing new contracts because they want the leverage that you can get as a free agent or even a 1 year out, one year to be free agent. And, you know, you can say what you want about Arsene Wenger. He's very prescient because he talked about this. He said, "I think that more and more people are going to be doing this and getting into and these situations happening." And so, you know, I do wonder about the likes of Saliba and Saka and whether they're more inclined to wait. I think the Saka one is slightly different because he's being paid so little money, and Saliba has, I don't know what he's on, but I mean, it was a 35 million
No more than 40 grand a week.
It was a £35 million transfer. So, you know, it must be 40, 50 grand a week. So it really depends on whether on what his agent wants to do. The thing that makes the most sense for everybody is some type of year extension that gives everyone a bit of comfort. So it means that at the end of next season, he's got 2 years left and then could even do an improved terms, but some sort of tactical thing. But the news that they're addressing this, the news that they're going positively, I mean, I didn't expect that. So that's really, really, really good relationship management, because a big part of football is protecting your assets by locking them in on long-term contracts, so you don't end up giving people away for cut price fees. So the fact that we're doing this here is good news, and also demonstrates that Mikel Arteta does indeed fancy the player, and all that nonsense was just that, absolute nonsense.
Yeah, and listen, I'm with Johnny on certain aspects. I don't think Arsenal managed the William Saliba situation very well. We should have put him straight out on loan instead of doing the half-season loan the season prior. I don't think there was anything wrong with putting him out at Marseille last season. He wouldn't have got a lot of minutes. If you are Arteta and your whole career is going to be on the roll of a dice of a single season, why would you give a 20-year-old a starting berth at Arsenal when you could get someone that's Premier League proven? But I do think some of the hysterics over how the player was treated, it's just nonsense. It's the infantilization of alpha males. Like, well, footballers are competitors. Like,
all it really comes down to is one thing: the amount we paid for him. We wouldn't be having any of these conversations if it was exactly the same. But instead of 35 million, we paid 10. Because it was just, we thought we were signing Franz Beckenbauer, or, you know, that was what we thought when it was like 35 million for a centre half. But you look back and you go, well, what else happened that window? I mean, I think that was the Pepe window, and
it's a diabolical window.
And where we, you know, when you're spending 70, you look at it and you go, if we're spending 72 million on Pepe, well, maybe all of these transfer fees should be divided by five. And that would be a true value, you know. So I think it was just a very, very bad time for the club. Fortunately, we still may get away with it because it looks like he's a class player, and I can't wait to have him in the mix.
It's very exciting. I'm glad that he's signing a new deal. Our defense next season is looking mean and very classy and modern. I mean, we've got a back line that's good for five seasons. And if they move forward at the level that we expect them to, it's going to be one of the best in the league. One of the best in the world. All right, okay, we're going to move on to the next topic. Bukayo Saka has been very absent from media headlines all window. FK from Latte Firm, brilliant YouTube channel. If you don't follow, give them a little subscribe. It's well worth your time. He's saying that somebody on Instagram called Arsenal Addict has announced this evening that Bukayo has put pen to paper on a new deal. Oh my God. If Bukayo Saka has signed a new deal with absolutely no drama, is it fair to say, Matt, that this club has officially moved out of the banter era and we are now a serious big team? What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, we just need to get it done. The whole Rafinha thing, we're all excited about it, but there's just that nagging feeling of like, why are we buying a right wing when our best player by far plays in that position? And it probably is a bit. Well, I don't know. I mean, it's very easy to think that there's a bit of a backup plan, an insurance policy, all of that sort of stuff, but I think Saka is going to sign. And the reason for that is the biggest reason, I think, is his age. Because he's so young that he can sign a 5-year contract now on really, really big money. And he can still basically leave in, three years, because that would be the moment that we would want to sell him. before he went into the final like year of his, before you were at risk of being in the final year of your contract, and he'd still only be 23 years old. So given his love of Arsenal, given the fact that he has this emotional connection, why would he not sign this contract? Why would he seek to leave now when there's clearly so much going on about Arsenal? And we ultimately will pay him whatever he wants. He'll be our most expensive, best paid player, I'd imagine. Probably 280, 300 grand a week, or you know, something like that, or 200, who knows? But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure about the sources, because I feel like a Fabrizio Romano or a David Ornstein would be the first to know on this.
Yeah, I'm giving a little bit too much love to a random Instagram account here with 1,000 likes. But
it's going to happen this summer, and when it does, it's going to be, we should treat it like one of our big signings. It would be amazing.
And you know, the interesting thing with this deal, I'm not worried. I'm really, really not worried about it. I'm not worried about Rafinha. I think if Bukayo Saka was agitating for a move, or there was a likelihood that he wouldn't sign, we probably would have heard a little bit more on the grapevine, right? The only one concern that I had was that Liverpool might lose Mo Salah, and they're probably going to try and shift him for 50 million. And it's obvious that Jurgen Klopp is a massive, massive fan of Saka. And I that was the only worry. That was anyway. And it also seemed a little bit odd that Arsenal would go so hard for Rafinha, because it's like, of all the positions, I'm not sure that right winger is where I would have spent 50 million. But regardless, I think he's going to sign a new deal. I think he wants to be the star boy. And maybe he's best friends with Jack Grealish, and he's probably looking at what happened to him at 26. Hardly got any game time last season. And you know, why not be the star boy, a club that's definitely on the rise?
Yeah, I think that's the point around Liverpool is an important one, because Liverpool have got a major rebuild on their hands.
Yes,
with Salah and Mane, and you know, there's suddenly a lot. You know, they've been incredible for many years, not won half as much as they deserve to, in my opinion. However, they need a rebuild. And their coach has already been there a long time. There's no guarantee how long he would stay. The only project, I think, that has got really guaranteed success over the next 2 to 3 years minimum is Manchester City, because I think Pep has gone all in, and just the types of signings they're making there, I think they're going to walk the league next year, Manchester City. But apart from that, I don't think there's any reason why Saka would leave Arsenal.
Agree. As long as you're progressing, and as long as you are the star that sits at the center of the Arsenal universe, I don't know why you would. Like, let's see. Like, if Arsenal don't progress at the rate that he needs, then he will go, and then we should be getting 120 million off of him.
And he'll be 23 years old. You know, think about Harry Kane.
Still be a kid, yeah. Still be a kid. All right. Matt, before we get into players that we're looking... I don't know. Let's pivot, and let's talk about exits. There's rumors that we're probably going to spend 180 million, but not a lot of people are talking about players that could potentially exit. And whenever you talk about player valuations of players that you could move on, everyone gets a little bit upset. So I've compiled a list, Matt. I've used Transfermarkt and my experience as a transfer addict over the last few years. And I've pulled up a list of players that I think could potentially be moved on for cash money. I've got 11 players up on the list. So I wanted to talk about which players you think could go and whether my fees are justified. Do you want to play this game?
I'm all in.
All right, Bernd Leno, German international goalkeeper, not first team, but definitely in the top three German goalkeepers.
You know, before we start this, I think there's one really, really important point to make around transfer fees, right?
Right.
And that is, we're all obsessed with transfer fees. Oh, it shouldn't be this or it shouldn't be that, but the reality is wages are way more important than transfer fees, in my opinion, because the wages are spread out over 5 years, 6 years. And I think a really great example of that is Manchester City looking to sell Gabriel Jesus and Raheem Sterling. Now, on paper, they're both going to get sold for 40, 45, 50 million, both of them. You know, one's 27, one's 25. But the difference, from what I can tell, is that Gabriel Jesus is going to join Arsenal on 192 grand. But Raheem Sterling is 275, 300 a week to move. His wages are way higher. And so I think the wage question is something like that doesn't get talked about enough. People should actually be interesting if people start talking about transfers over the whole lifetime of the contract as well, versus just what the transfer fee is.
They're better about that in America, aren't they?
They are better about it. And then the other thing about it is, you know, everyone's going on about how much money we're spending, but we got something like 530,000 off our wage bill with Lacazette and Aubameyang, just those two leaving. I mean, that's 2 million a month in wages.
For those
two players. So, you know, I know that we don't like not getting money, but the more important thing is getting these players off the wage bill. And I think that's the piece. It's like, I can't believe we're giving these players away for free. Well, yeah, but it's not really free because we've used them throughout the lifetime of their contract. We've extracted value for them. And now we're going to take that money off the wage bill and be able to use it elsewhere. So, you know, Bernd Leno is a great example of that. You know, Bernd Leno is probably on 100 grand a week, 90 grand a week. So, you know, whether it's 12 million or whether it's 6 million, I mean, it's more important just to get him off the wage bill and get that reallocated to someone who can do more in the team each week.
Yeah, I mean, the Aubameyang is an £18 million a year player. We palmed him off to Barcelona. I don't think he was particularly good. I know he scored a few goals, but you know, it's not a very strong league. And Barcelona fans were starting to feel the pain of Oba, but he's at Barcelona next year, and that saved us 36 million that can go back into the coffers. Our wage bill went from 190 million when Arteta started, and it's down to about 85, still fifth highest in the league, but a massive cut in wages. So I think you're right. So let's talk about some of the players that we're going to sell and whether my transfer numbers are off. Bernd Leno. I think we can get 12 million for Bernd Leno. I think he is a Premier League number one goalkeeper. I don't think his wages would be higher than 70 grand a week. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, we'd spend 12 million on Bernd Leno to come in and be our second choice goalkeeper.
Right.
So, you know, absolutely think that that's a possibility. He's a good goalkeeper. And, you know, he probably hasn't ruled out the opportunity to play for Germany in the World Cup. Well, go to the World Cup, probably not play for Germany, but go to the World Cup. So he needs to get a move this summer. And I'm sure he's pushing for one. He's been a consummate professional as well.
Top professional. I agree. All right, next one. Nicholas in the comments has said, has Holding's value gone up because of his hair? Nicholas, of course it's gone up because of his beautiful golden hair. I've got Rob Holding down at £18 million.
No way. Not a chance.
Why not? He's English. He's got great hair. He's done a good job in the last season. Why can Liverpool get £18 million for 18-year-old players and we can't get £18 million for Holdinho?
I think because when you spend that money, you're buying potential. But I think everyone knows what Rob Holding's level is. And he's a solid, dependable fourth choice centre half. Yeah, I'd keep him. I'd keep him around for another year, maybe. I think he could still do a job. But I mean, well,
how are you valuing him? If I come, you're at Newcastle.
10 million. 10 million.
10 million. Okay. All right. So my grand total for these 11 players has dropped by 10 million. We're now at 91 million. Okay. Next one up, Granit Xhaka. Roma tried to lowball us last season before spending a shit ton of money on Tammy Abraham. I've got him down for 15 million. I think he had a bit of a redemption arc last season. He's still 29 years old. He's never relied on pace. He's absolutely made of the strongest of materials. If Roma come back in and they say, listen, Matt, we want a bit of granite. What are you saying transfer-wise? I'm saying 15 million pounds. Why not?
I wouldn't sell him for 15 million pounds. I think he's pretty indispensable for us, given how shallow our midfield options are in the position that he plays. And, you know, we were brutally exposed at the end of last season. Brutally exposed. True. And, you know, Mo Elneny, bless him, is not up to it. Like I know we've given him a new contract, but I mean, he's not up to it. He's not up to the level we need. I like the guy, and it's good. You know, we've got all the good press of him on the treadmill and getting fit and all of that sort of stuff. But we need Granit because we don't have the depth. And signing Tielemann, if we were to sign Tielemann, which is sort of is a weird one. It looks like we may or may not, but we still need Granit for the depth. And the leadership behind the scenes. So I wouldn't sell him, and I don't think we will sell him.
Matt, you're being so controversial with these sales. All right, so Granit Xhaka does not get sold. All right, so I can't do the maths in real time. Okay, here's one. Nico Pepe.
I'd bite your hand off for 15 million. I'd fly him wherever he needed to go.
Matt, do you think his 140 grand a week wages are going to be problematic in moving him anywhere, even for free this summer? Is the most clubs must be aware that
How many years on his contract?
I don't know. I think he must have 3 years left to go on his deal.
Absolute waste of space. No place for him in the Arsenal. I hope. Unfortunately, he seems like a nice kid, but I really hope that Arteta is doing his silent treatment and making it clear that he's going to be training with the kids and he could basically sling his hook and do one.
He does have 2 years left on his deal.
So 2 years, okay.
There may be opportunity. I feel like Sevilla or someone like that is going to come in. I think Monchi is going to sniff out a deal here. You know, put him at Sevilla and he'll probably be pretty decent. I heard the Man United were interested in him at one point. I was like, could be interesting. Okay, so £15 million. He was a £72 million player.
He was never a 72.
Domrabble.
That's what we paid for him, but...
Very true. All right, okay. Next up on the list, Hector Bellerin.
This is the right amount for him, but I struggle to see...
He's a £50 million player at some point, remember?
I know. He did his cruciate, right? And
he got on the vegan diet.
That was the problem.
Planting too many trees.
Should have stayed eating antibiotic-filled chicken.
Too many crop tops.
Yeah, no. Look, I love Hector. I mean, he's sort of one of those... I sort of feel like he'd be one of those employees if you had him. That would really just fucking do your head in. You'd like him. You'd think he's a really, really good guy. But you'd also just be like, we've just had enough of each other. Let's just sling your hook. And when he's now trying to go, oh, well, I want to go to Betis, but I don't want them to pay. It's like, fuck off. You're going to go where we tell you to go. And someone's got to cough up some cash. And 8 million is generous. So let's get it done. We love you, but
8 million is a bargain.
Honestly,
man, I think it's a bargain. I mean, maybe not on the salary that he wants, but
I mean, I prefer him to Cedric.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But wild how much an injury changed the trajectory of his career. I've seen a lot of fast players in the Premier League and at Arsenal in particular, and I thought Hector, when he burst onto the scene, some of the balls that he could chase down. Like it was unacceptable that he could move that fast, and then it just disappeared. Like you know, basically overnight. And he's still very young. He's only 26. All right, okay. Next one, and we don't have to dwell on this one. Pablo Marie, most handsome man.
Yep, 5 million. Arsenal. Perfect. 5 million.
5 million. Done. Get him out to Udinese. Okay. Ainsley Maitland-Niles attracted the interest of Nottingham Forest. Is this a mistake? Should he be a backup right back?
No, get rid of him. He's had his time.
5 million.
Five. I mean, what did Wolves offer for him after the FA 18. Cup?
No, 15. 18.
I think it might even be more than that. We should have sold him. Should have sold him then.
Reece Nelson.
Interesting one. I would do another year on loan at Feyenoord and see what happens.
His deal must be coming to a close, right?
Yeah, look, I think it was interesting here. I do like these little these sort of more honest conversations. I thought the one with Eddie shed a lot of light on his predicament and helped us understand him better as a player. And it was interesting to hear Reece Nelson come out around the time of the Europa final and say, really putting his hands up a little bit and saying, the reason I haven't banged really is poor decisions around like lifestyle application, and just sort of thinking that it was all going to happen for him. So when I hear that, it does make me feel like there is some recognition of being in Last Chance Saloon. And I think there's nothing like being in Last Chance Saloon and seeing your dreams of like being one of the really one a top player. I would not be surprised if there was a story there in him coming back and playing for Arsenal.
Yeah, I heard from a very good place that he blew his Hoffenheim opportunity because he thought he was a rock star like Jadon Sancho. So it'd be very, very interesting to see if he can channel that talent. And I think a lot of people in football think that he has all of the right ingredients to do something great, but just didn't apply himself. All right, next player, Lucas Torreira. I mean, when he landed at Arsenal, I was like, this is the guy that we've been waiting for. Aggressive, nasty, can pass the ball, can move up and down the pitch. Didn't work out. Those little legs.
It wasn't even, I don't think it was even the little legs. I mean, Kante's not the same size, same build. And Torreira was absolutely brilliant when he arrived. I'll never forget the 4-2 versus Spurs, when he scored that goal and, everyone was cheering it. It seems like there was an issue with London. It just couldn't hack it. And it was more of a social thing. I mean, I still think he's better than Elneny, but culturally, he's done. We've just got to get him off the books. And like you said, the idea that Fiorentina are pleading poverty after selling Vlahovic for 70 odd million is an absolute joke. So we'll see. But yeah, he should definitely not be coming back to Arsenal. He should be going and playing in Serie A at a very slow pace.
Very true. All right, next one, Daniel Ballard. I've got him down for 5 million. Vincent Kompany wanted him at Burnley. The deal has fallen through.
Yeah, I was reading about that. I mean, 5 million seems a snip, doesn't it, for a Northern Ireland international? But other people are saying, look, if you've watched him, he's championship level. Like, it's Northern Ireland. Like, you can say he's a full international, but it's Northern Ireland. And, he's a championship level player. He's being sold to a championship club. Championship budgets, 5 million sounds very good if we could get it, but I suspect we'll get a bit less than that.
The final one, Runison. Runison. Honestly, someone should have got fired for bringing that guy into the club. Worst
We'll
goalkeeper I've ever seen.
pay 1 million to get him to get rid of him. How
All
about
right. Okay, so Matt, you're basically saying that these 11 players, I think roughly you think that we could get about 85 million. I said 101 million. Not far off. All right, let's talk about something a little bit more exciting. Let's go into Gabby Jesus. Jesus, it's Jesus, it's Jesus, because he's Portuguese. Jose Mourinho,
I'm
not
just gonna have a
Jose.
sip of water while you do the intro.
All right, Gabriel Jesus. Arsenal are rumored to have signed him today for £45 million. The story coming out of Brazil is that he's on £190,000 per week. I think that puts him in the top three in the Arsenal hierarchy. I think he's actually the second highest paid player now, behind Thomas Partey, who's closer to £220,000 per week. Fabrizio Romano, the god of transfers, maybe not the god, maybe he's like the Jesus to the god that is David Ornstein, reckons that Gabriel has signed a deal until 2027, and basically, he'll be back in time for preseason, which is absolutely massive for Arsenal. If you're not watching on the video, I've got a graphic up which gives me a lot of joy. When starting, and he's made 99 starts since 2017. He's played 8,000 minutes. He's contributed 76 times to some sort of goal effort. That's 53 goals, 23 assists. That's 152 minutes per goal. He's got power. He's got pace. He's got unbelievable work ethic. He's a little bit nasty. I was watching a video today of him bullying Zaha, knocking him about when he was on the floor. I think we've got a great deal here. I think we've signed a winner, an absolute winner, who's got a chip on his shoulder because he's been second best at Manchester City. He's always been seen as the bridesmaid, never the bride. Matt Candela, Arsenal are about to do a massive deal. What do you think about Gabby Jesus? Jesus, stop saying Jesus, for God's sake.
I think it's a great deal. I think it's right age, right profile. He's won 5 league championships, but he's 25. He's not 30. You know, we're going to get him in the peak of his peak years. He's got a big World Cup coming up that he has to hit the ground running so he can go into that firing with confidence. And really, when you look at the price, which I think is a key piece of it, that we've been able to get him for 45 is, you know, I think that's where the Rafinha thing's coming into it, because when you're only paying 45 million and the wages are, they're big, but they're not Aubameyang crazy.
190 is fine for a player that's won 5 championships.
Exactly. And so, you know, I think, I always like the way people, like a lot of the coaches, talk is that how many goals do we need to add next season? I think we need to add 30 goals in the league. You know, 30, at least 30 goals on what we scored last year. And I think he can get 15 of them. And then we've got to find an extra 15 from another new signing or getting people to increase their rates. So, you know, when you look at the brief like that and go, we're spending 45 million to get 15 Premier League goals, do we think we're going to get it? And I think we will. That's my target for him, 15 Premier League goals.
Yeah, I'm with you, Matt. I think the job Arsenal had, one of the big jobs Arsenal had to do this summer, was find 10 extra points. And I think something, Ben Jacobs is the guy that's kind of been dropping a lot of the exclusives on this story. He basically said, if Gabby Jesus was in the Arsenal side last season, they finished top 4. And it's just as simple as that. I think he could be a 20-goal-a-season striker. I think he's worth at least 8 assists. I love the way that he creates. I love the way that he sets the tone for the attack. He's very robust as a player, not a lot of injuries. And I think now you've got two players in the side that have got a lot of output. You know, Eddie Nketiah is a player that's definitely going to grow. And I think Gabby Jesus is a player that's already there. And I love players that have got something to prove. Patrick Vieira couldn't get into that Milan side, comes to Arsenal, blows up. Thierry Henry, like, I saw him in a Juventus shirt the other day wearing a number 6. Disgusting. Came to Arsenal, made it happen. Like, there's a lot of players that Arsenal have had over the years that have got a point to prove. And when you've got a point to prove, and you're made the main man at a club like Arsenal, like, I just think the world's his oyster. So I'm really excited about the move. And also, it shows a bit of ambition to be like, I will take a step down to take a step up in my career. And Jesus has done that, you know? Like, this is a brave move from him. This is Bergkamp-esque, I think. And like, you know, Bergkamp moved from Inter Milan.
It's not.
It is.
I don't think he's a Bergkamp level. I think he's the right player for us at the right time. And I think he can get us 15 Premier League goals. And I think 45 million is a good price. And I think the wages are good. He, in my opinion, is not going to be. He's not the level at the moment where he can carry the whole team on his back. He's not a Thierry Henry at the moment. He's not going to change the whole tone of Arsenal Football Club. But I do think that in the way that, say, a Saka does, Saka can't do that yet, but you feel like he's getting there. But that's okay. It's like, not every player needs to be the greatest, you know. We're comparing Jesus with Thierry Henry, who's the greatest Premier League player of all time. And that's unreasonable. Or Dennis Bergkamp, potentially the greatest Premier League player of all time. So he's not at that level, but we don't need him to be. We just need him to get 15 Premier League goals, and he will. So that's why
I think he's going to get more than 15. I think he's going to get 20. And anybody that was on this podcast that heard me say bad things about short players. If you heard me say anything bad about Gabriel Jesus, that's a lie. I didn't say it. That was Matt Candela.
I do like this comment from Green LP 84 though. Good. This is what we've got, such a great community on there. Ian Wright, you know, signed a little bit, you know, already, I mean, different backgrounds, but both hungry goal scorers, proven track record. But, you know, what's not to stop Gabriel scoring a hat trick against Crystal Palace on the first game of the season? You know, could happen.
It's got quite an interesting sort of, I don't know, story arc. Like he was painting the streets of Sao Paulo 10 years ago, and now he's coming to Arsenal for 190 grand a week. There's a few people pointing out that it felt a little bit Ian Wright-ish. And if he has a career anywhere near the level of Ian Wright, then amazing. I'm still blown away that Ian Wright started Arsenal at 28 years old. That just feels weird. But it's magic. I think this is a brilliant sign and I'm very excited about it. All right. Okay. So let's move on to another story, because there's a lot of chatter about Rafinha. Is there a bigger curveball this summer than Arsenal signing a right winger for a reported £50 million? We've got Rafinha. He had 3 assists last season, 11 goals in a Bielsa side that was struggling. There's no player that works harder in the Premier League. There's no player that sprints more. He's out on an island of his own on the graphs. He's tactically robust. He's incredibly fit. And his YouTube videos are outrageous. Matt, when you saw Rafinha behaving badly when we played Leeds earlier on in the season, did you expect to see him in an Arsenal shirt?
Did not see this one coming. Absolutely.
Wild, right?
Absolute bonkers. But I do think it's this thing I'm talking about, which is we need 30 goals in the Premier League, additional goals. And we've got the opportunity to bring in new players. Jesus can get 15 goals. This guy could get 15 goals. And I think Arteta just saw it. You know, we've lost Aubameyang and Lacazette. In theory, we thought we had 30 goals from those two last season. We had about 6. And so what we're really doing is we're retooling. We're getting rid of Lacazette and Aubameyang, and we're going to bring in two players to go and do that. And I think that's the way he's thinking, is these more durable frontline forwards. But I think that's the way we think about it. It's Rafinha and Jesus, if we can, are replacing Lacazette and Aubameyang. And I fancy both of them to get 15 goals if we can get this over the line. And, you know, it looks like we want to get it done. And it's just fantastic.
Yeah, this is the sort of player that makes me believe that Arsenal are really, really serious about winning the Premier League title. I would have thought that we'd make this sort of move next season because we've already got a brilliant right winger. But bringing him in, it seems that Arteta is one of the few managers in the Premier League that's considering that there's going to be 5 substitutes this season. So plenty of minutes. And if you're looking to unlock a deep block, or you're looking to counterattack, this player has pace, power, aggression. He's got everything. And he's still only 25, so we'd be giving his best years to Arsenal. And it doesn't seem like Barcelona are going to turn up with the £60 million cash that Leeds think is needed to secure his signature. So I think this is a monstrous signing. It's unexpected, but again, like the ambition that we're showing here, I absolutely love it. And it is really sharp to sign players that have played under Bielsa, because it means they're tactically intelligent. And it means that they're fit.
So, well, it's just, you just look at the team and you just think everyone is aggressive. Everyone is on the front foot. This is not just think about that. And end of era Wenger was just, everyone was just lolzing around, really, weren't they? Like epitomized by Mesut Ozil, you know, and and Mustafi, and all that nonsense. Like a lot of really talented players we had. But in terms of intensity, aggression, desire, I mean, not a lot going on those fronts. So this is great news if we can get this one over the line.
Okay, so the third big rumor, because apparently I think it's going to be a big week. Arsenal start pre-season on Tuesday or Wednesday, which is absolutely nuts considering that England were playing a horrible Nations Cup tournament only a week ago. Lissandro Martin, the fee is rumoured to be £30 million. He's a special player. He can play left back, central midfield and centre back. The reason I wanted to bring this one up, Matt, is because we haven't really addressed the midfield. And it doesn't look like there is any direct competition coming in for Thomas Partey. It doesn't. I mean, it feels like the Yuri Tielemans rumour has died down and Arsenal are going to play chicken with Leicester. But Lissandro Martin can do everything that Xhaka can. He can defend. He's got pace. He can carry the ball. He's got those long passes from deep. Is there a chance that Lissandro Martinez is coming into Arsenal to play central midfield and we might see Granit Xhaka go? Or do you think that this is just a straight play for upgrading on a left back that is probably going to be injured for 40% of the season? What do you think?
I think there's always going to be somewhere where he can play. You know, this guy can, it seems like he could play there, play somewhere every week. In truth, I don't know. I know that we can use the examples of people like Mascherano playing at centre half, but that wasn't in the Premier League. It was against Premier League teams in the Champions League and the like. But I do worry a little bit about his size at the back, because I think he's 5'7", right? 5'8".
He's not a big boy.
Which seems bizarre for a centre half. But what do I know? You know, if we're going...
They say he's one of the best aerially. He's 5'9", but they say like he's his numbers are outrageous. I know it's the Dutch league, but height is height. You're either good in the air or you're not. And apparently he's Ayala levels of aerial.
Yeah, threat. Well, yeah. So we'll see again. I'd be surprised if we get this one done. I think I feel like United are going to have to go in for him potentially.
I think that if you're 24 years old. I think Arsenal will be appealing for him. And apparently the rumour is that Arsenal have made a very good case for bringing him in. And everything that I understand, they see him as a potential first team left back moving forward. I just feel like the Ten Hag thing at United, it feels like a good idea on paper, but I think there's such a massive job to be done there. Their CEO's getting rolled by fans, getting videoed. There's no technical director. Like, why would you put your career into a situation like that? It just feels horrible.
Yeah, I'd love this. I'd love it.
All right, Matt. Okay, we're going to... this final slide is going to make you happy, I think. Oh. Matt, look at this. We're looking at the final slide. I've got Lissandro Martin, Fabio Vieira, Yuri Tielemans, Matt Turner, William Saliba, Rafinha, and Gabby Jesus on a slide.
And if you put a Saka with a contract renewal on there.
Saka with a contract renewal, same with Eddie Nketiah. Matt, this isn't a club that is aiming to get 3 more points next year to finish above Spurs. This is a club aiming for the Premier League title in 2 years. Am I wrong? Am I losing my shit out here?
This window is 10 out of 10. And I don't think we're going to get them all. Just to be clear, I think we're going to have to see what happened, but it's going to be close to this, hopefully. I don't think we're going to get Tielemans and Rafinha and Martinez. But if we could get, just lose out on one of them across the, lose out on Tielemans, I guess. But I mean, I think we need Tielemans more than we need Martinez.
I think we need to. I think we're going to get Tielemans. I don't think we're going to miss out on him. 25 million, that's a bargain.
Yeah, no, this is 10 out of 10 stuff. But what do we know? We thought last year's window was a bit, there's a lot, you know, it wasn't a slam dunk. And people were talking about United's window last year being a great window, you know, with Jadon Sancho and Varane and all those players. So it only you only know how good the window is when they're all bedded in and playing, but certainly the right age, the right profile, the right attitude, the Premier League experience in a lot of cases. They can hit the ground running. They've got a World Cup they need to be really sharp for. We're trying to get the business done early. Oh, my God. Having this business done early is just so weird. It's June. It's June, for Christ's sake.
It's amazing. All right, Matt, I know there's one last thing that I want to talk to you about. I know that there's a flood in your house. This is probably not your priority this evening, but I did want to bring it up because I thought you would have an opinion. There was a journalist that posted Arteta, no excuses this season, and it kind of riled me a little bit because it's like there's a group of people online, the standard merchants, the people that want to create this image around them. They have higher standards than anybody else. And I don't like the idea that Arteta is living off excuses. I think there's a process in place. There's a long-term plan. And last year, we delivered what we needed to do. European football. Was it disappointing that we didn't make it into the Champions League? Absolutely. But there's not excuses at the end of the season. There's opportunities to build, grow, move to the next level. And I think that this summer is showing, firstly, that there's a lot of faith in Arteta, which must mean that things behind the scenes are going pretty well and the coaching is going quite well. But everything that we are seeing that needs to get improved, that can't all get improved at once, seems to be. So I just wanted to get your take on the no excuses people that in this moment in time are already talking about what will happen if we fail next season. And I just wanted to get your vibe on it.
Look, I agree with you through the lens of, you know, that there's no need for this sort of generalist approach to, you know, this idea of no excuses. But what I would say is there are areas where there are no excuses. There's no excuses not to rotate the team. There's no excuses to fall out with players. There's no excuses to persist with players who are underperforming because they've got a big name or reputation or experience. Arteta has made mistakes, and there's no excuse for repeating those mistakes. So I think it's just that there are some areas, but it's not about a position or a result or anything less than this position is a failure. So I agree with on all of that sort of stuff, but we need Arteta to not continue making the same mistakes he's made in the past. He can make new ones. That's okay, because that's part of developing and learning. But just don't make the same mistakes that you've made again. And you've had enough warning on some of these things. So it seems like he is learning. But, you know, like you said, there's going to be a long road.
Yeah, I agree. My thing is, everything is going pretty well at Arsenal. We've got a young squad. The players are all signing new deals. We are recruiting. We're spending big money. And for the first time in 15 years, the ambition isn't top four. The ambition is to win the league. And that might be naive, but we're moving hard at an ambition. And I don't think you can knock it. And if you don't enjoy the journey, what the fuck is the point?
Well, I think it's also about we don't know about that. Some of the decisions you have to give the benefit of time to see. So if we were being very, very, if we were doing nothing this window, there would be no excuse for having not invested in January. There wouldn't have been. What's happening is we're seeing, it feels as fans, like the money we didn't invest in January has been added to the summer pot. That's what it feels like. And so that changes the narrative, you know. So you know, it's always evolving. There's always new pieces of information that are going to help us judge the job that Mikel Arteta is doing. You know, it's been a rocky road, but we're on the right track now. But we've got to keep on that track. And just because we're on the right track now doesn't mean that we should just let him get away with anything he wants next season. And but you know, it's looking positive, and he's looking like a man in control. Him and Edu, I'm loving the vibes. You can tell they're feeling good and confident about next season in a way that we didn't see. This is the first time we've really seen it.
Listen, I forgave Edu. Doesn't mean a thing to him. Doesn't mean a thing to anyone else. But Edu, if you're watching, I forgive you. You're a beautiful man. You get the deals done. I love the profile of players that you're bringing in. It's a little bit too Brazilian. But listen, Arsene Wenger went a little bit too French. And where did that end up? An invincible season. So listen, I'm all about it. I think the vibes are good. This is going to be a huge week. The more deals we can get done now, the better it is for our start, which comes very early. I mean, August is absolutely packed. I think there's 5 games with the easiest fixture list going because of what I did on the Grove. So things are feeling good, right?
Yeah, well, I think that fixture list is also a big piece, because I think we have been blessed. We've been blessed with that fixture list. Le Grove did it.
Blessed or gifted?
You delivered the fixture list. we salute you. We're grateful for you. We love you. But I think it's also, when you're gifted that, everyone at Arsenal must be going, listen, we've got to get everyone in, because our whole season, we can be top of the league after 10, 15 games. And then when you're top of the league after 15 games, well, anything can happen, because your confidence is up, especially with a young team. Who knows what could happen? You know, I think that will be the mindset. But, you know, it's so weighted that way. The end of the season is a nightmare. So we have to hit the ground running extremely fast. So that means we have to get players in early, which means we need the best quality players.
Thomas Partey's fit. Kieran Tierney's fit. Tomiyasu's fit. Like, we not are for, that Crystal not, Palace.
Not for long, probably, but...
No, yeah. Not for long. Exactly.
That's the trickiest game of the first... It's only a really tricky game in the first 7 or 8 games, I think, is that Palace one.
Agreed. All right, Matt. Well, thank you for joining. You and I are going to do a little Patreon this week. I think we're going to do maybe the 2001-2002 transfer window.
Yeah.
We're going to do a little bit of reminiscing. So if you like this sort of content and you want to pay for some extra, you can go to our Patreon account. Just type in the Arsenal Opinion. Pledge what you'd like. We're building up the group heading into the new season. And then there will be one Patreon podcast every single week. It'll probably be the Europa Cup game that you get for as part of the deal. And if you are on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating. If you are on Spotify, give us a 5-star rating. If you are in the room right now or you're watching this on video, why the fuck haven't you subscribed? This channel will be going. You want to get those emails every time we go live. Matt Kandela, where can people find you?
You can find me at Matt Kandela on the Twitter sphere. We'll be tapping away on the Bluebird app all week as we get the latest news on incomings and outgoings. So we're going to be busy.
So that is the end of the AOP. If you've been watching along, thank you very much. If you've been watching outside the live environment, we appreciate you. We love the comments. We are going to be back next Sunday. We will have a special guest from another YouTube channel. It will be very exciting. And on that note, I will say, Matt Kandela and Pedro, ciao for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.